Well, this is a little bit of a special program today, special occasion. As some of you know, my godbrother Yadubara Prabhu, who produces those wonderful DVDs of Srila Prabhupada and the historical times that Prabhupada created, those DVDs are coming. I think we're up to number 10 now. What's it called in the series? Following Srila Prabhupada, yeah. Not just footage of Srila Prabhupada, but footage of the times around Srila Prabhupada, like what was happening in the temples and different devotees, and then Prabhupada's arrival. And he somehow has found all this various footage through the years, and he puts on these wonderful, or he produces these wonderful DVDs. And just recently he received a DVD, he received some footage anonymously from Switzerland. There was no name on the package or anything like that. And inside was a video of Srila Prabhupada's visit to Geneva in 1974. And it was, I don't know if it's the original or a copy, but it was obviously done by a television station. It was a reportage of a particular news broadcast in Geneva at that time in 1974. They'd come to the temple, they heard Prabhupada was, probably the devotees had informed the television channel and the radio and the newspapers like we do, that Prabhupada was coming, so a television crew showed up and they filmed. And the footage probably was aired, but the devotees never got it. So it was never in any archive or anything. And it just, someone kindly just sent it to Yadubara, somehow or other. It's brief, it's only like 8 minutes long. But he watched it, and then he contacted me and he said, Maharaj, Inaduna Maharaj, it's very nice because you're in that video. You're playing Mridanga and jumping around and leading the kirtan when Prabhupada's there. You know, it's just brief, you have to look in the crowd. He said, would you like a coffee? I said, yeah. It's like, you know, it's such, for a disciple, it's so special. Those were, you know, in those days we didn't think about those things so much, recording. Some devotees, of course, thought of it earlier enough to start recording Prabhupada. But I remember when I joined in 1971, people didn't have cameras. Unless you were like a professional photographer, there weren't the common like cameras around in 71. So I was always, when I first joined, I was always hoping that someday I would get a picture of Srila Prabhupada. Remember that? And in those days it was black and white when they started coming out. So I was thinking, I was always hoping, I heard there was a rumor that some devotee had a camera in New Vrindavan during Prabhupada's visit and took some photos of Srila Prabhupada. So I wrote to that devotee and I said, can I please have some photos? He said, yeah, well, if you pay me some money, I can send you photos. I got 3 photos, black and white photos of Srila Prabhupada, and we used to treasure those. So how times have changed. So we're going to show that video this morning on the screen. You can see a lot of it is my godbrother Yogeshwara Prabhu answering the questions of the TV man, the interviewer. And you can see they're a little, Mangalavati be able to perceive, they're a little antagonistic, the television, thinking of it as kind of like some weird little cult or something, you know. But it's just so overwhelming, the spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement, you know. So, but they, anyway. And there's different questions they pose to Yogeshwara Prabhu. And they show Prabhupada's arrival, getting off the plane, and then coming into the lounge area, and then Prabhupada getting in a Mercedes car, and they show the camera goes right up to the Mercedes sign, the emblem of, you know, the gurus in the Mercedes. And I'm leading kirtan there. I'm looking at myself, is that me? like 23 or 24 years old. And then it switches back to the temple. Yogeshwar is giving an interview, and then Prabhupada arrives. And I remember that. Prabhupada arrives. We're having kirtan, and Prabhupada, I see myself bowing down really quickly. And then standing up and folding my hands in respect to Prabhupada. And then there's initiation, and there's a couple girls who get initiated. I don't know if they stayed, but it would be wonderful if they ever got that video. Prabhupada's giving the name and beads to one girl, a Swiss girl. And then there's the initiation, and there's some kirtan afterwards. So it's, for me, it's very special, because you couldn't go out and purchase something like that. It already happened. It's history. And the fact that it was recorded there, I always cherish when I see, like, someone took a photo, and I was in the photo with Prabhupada, but here's some video footage, so we'll show that. But I wanted to give you a little background of that time, so you could appreciate it more. Prabhupada, of course, came to the States in, was it 65? 66. And he began the Krishna Conscious Movement in America. For the first year, Prabhupada was actually alone in New York City. And one time he told the devotees, he said, if I told you what I went through that first year, you would not believe me. Because he was practically alone. He was alone. And it wasn't until 12 months later that he met those first few boys, Hayagriva and Umapati and Ray Rama and those different devotees who helped him begin the movement in the Lower East Side in the Bowery. But there was like 12 months where Prabhupada was alone. He said sometimes he would go down. It was so difficult. He would go down to the docks and check the timings when the boats would be going back to India. Because things just weren't working out. But then by Krishna's arrangement, he said later, Krishna sent a few good men. And the rest is history. But when I joined in 1971, there were only 10 temples in the world. Because Prabhupada had only preached really in India, or in America. He had one disciple in India. He'd initiated one young man in India before coming to the West. And then in those 5 years, 6 years, only 10 temples have been established in America. And of course, by that time there was one temple starting in by the efforts of some senior devotees. Well, senior in those days meant you were a devotee for 4 or 5 years. So some senior devotees had started, you know, Guru Das and Jamuna and Shamsundar and Malati and Mukunda and Janaki. They had started a center in London. And there was like 10 devotees. And growing gradually. And there was a very fledgling center in Berlin. I forget the name of the devotee. I think he was preaching alone. And there was a fledgling center in Paris. So we had approximately 13 temples. This is really the pioneer days. I still think that we're in the pioneer days because so many people don't know about Krishna consciousness. So in one sense, we're still somewhat at the pioneer stage of spreading Krishna consciousness, but those were really the pioneer days, 13 temples. So Prabhupada had recently formed what he called the Governing Board Commission, the GBC. And I remember when our temple president, Bhagavan Das, was contacted by Prabhupada that he wanted him to be a member of the GBC. I think there was 5 or 6 devotees. So we thought, wow, that's amazing. Our temple president's going to be, what's a GBC? What does it do? And even he didn't understand Bhagavan, so he flew to L.A. And Prabhupada, you know, instructed him that he wanted a group of men to manage the society. Because in 1971, Śrīla Prabhupāda was ill. And he'd had some heart problems again. I think a mild heart attack in San Francisco. And he wanted to go back to India to recover. He felt that the Ayurvedic physicians in Vrindavan and the weather would be conducive to his recovery. So there's a famous lecture in Los Angeles where he's teaching the devotees the Nisringadev prayers. And he's saying to them that Nisringadev will protect you in my absence. I am going now to India, and on the way I'm going to stop in Japan and have my books printed. And hopefully when I'm in India, I can establish a temple. He said, there are so many temples in India, but there's no reason that I should not also have a temple for our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, and Prabhupada said, I'm an old man. He said, I may not return. So you carry on this Krishna conscious movement in my absence. So, those were the times. Prabhupada went to India and he got healthy and he came back, of course, to America. But when he came back, he had the desire to spread Krishna consciousness, you know, beyond what was established in America and the few centers in Europe. I think a devotee, Sudama, went to Japan like that. So these are really pioneer days. And Prabhupada contacted Bhagavan Das and said that he wanted him to go to Europe to establish more temples in Europe beyond just what we had, those three little centers, well, London and two other centers. So you all know that I asked Bhagavan if I could go with him. And he said, well, do you know anything about Europe? And I'd been to Europe. I think I'd been to London, Amsterdam, and Berlin. So I kind of told a white lie. I said, yes, I've been everywhere. And I know all the camping spots. So when we travel, I know where to camp. We can take a tent. And so he said, okay, all right, so you can come. So, I won't tell the story again, because those devotees know how we traveled to New York and met Prabhupada and traveled on the plane with Prabhupada to London, and then Prabhupada gave us the instructions to go to, you know, what to do in France. He said, you go and you do Harinam and you preach and you get my books translated into French, and you help with the Paris Center. So when we got to Paris, I remember that the center was just outside of Paris in a place called Fontenay aux Roses. And when we walked in, it was an old house, and you know, when we drove up, I thought it was like an abandoned house the way it looked. So the two of us walked in, and the devotee was doing artik, and as we walked in, the altar was on a very fragile, like cardboard boxes. They were so poor, they didn't have, it was on a cardboard boxes, and they had a painting of Lord Chaitanya, sort of looked like a painting of Lord Chaitanya. And when we walked in, the devotees were dancing, and because they were dancing, the altar crashed down. I turned to Bhagavan, I said, my God, where have we come? So they quickly put the altar, the devotees stopped the arti, putting down, and he put the altar back together and continued the arti. I go, where have I come? What am I doing here? So Prabhupada's instruction was not, you know, that we were to establish, you know, establish firmly the center in Paris. So we bought a mimeograph machine, I think that's what it was called, where you would write something and you'd set the letters like that, and then you'd put it through this machine with a plastic paper, and then you would print little things. So there were no books. So we would do this every morning. I remember I could hear it during a class. In a back room, somebody was on the mimeograph machine printing out translations of Prabhupada's lectures from English into French, and we would go out and we'd just distribute those papers in the beginning. That was our preaching. Going on the streets, there were five or six of us. We'd go downtown to La Pigalle, and it was a market, and the flea market, and we just give out these with our address, you know, at the bottom. And, you know, people would show up for the Sunday program, which was like some halava and some juice and maybe some sweet ball or something. Anyway, then, you know, Bhagavan was quite a good manager, so some money was coming. We met one wealthy man who sold some things in the La Pigalle, Mr. Wagner. I used to hear his name, but it was all kind of secretive, but I found out he was giving donations, so Isha Upanishad came in French, and then I think something else, and then eventually Bhagavad Gita. So as things were developing, then Bhagavan said that he wanted, Prabhupada's real desire was to spread Krishna consciousness in different parts of Europe as well. So he sent five of us to Spain. And in those days, Spain was ruled by Franco. He was like a dictator. And some of you know the story. We were really enthusiastic and we just drove down, you know, with some mimeographed things in Spanish. And drove across the border. In those days, we didn't wear karmic clothes. I don't know how we got across the border, but we got across. I think we gave some incense to the border guards or something. In those days, incense wasn't so popular. It wasn't even known, actually. Just in the church, they used it. And we had started a business. Hari Velasa started a business called Spiritual Sky. So we took some packs, and we got across the border. And we got to Madrid. We got out of the car. We started having kirtan down the street. It was an ecstatic kirtan, and people were like in shock with waving and everything. And all of a sudden, the police came, and they just literally threw us in the back of the paddy wagon and took us downtown. Now, we were used to that because in Paris, whenever we would do Harinam, it was always a running battle with the police. But we were all young men, and the police were all these old fat guys in the old days in Paris. You know, they get... So we'd have kirtan, and we'd say, look, when the police come, we'll meet four blocks down the street in another quartier. Is that what they call it? Quartier. We have a rimming, so they'd come, we'd see them coming in on their old paddy wagons, the old cars, you know, and we'd just start running in six or seven different directions. And they never catch, sometimes they catch us, but usually we'd meet, you know, we'd reassemble 15 minutes later and start again. It was like all day long like that. So when they finally caught us, they were, ugh. But they really couldn't, you know, those days it was a revolutionary spirit in France. Down in the Saint-Michel, that was this, near the Sorbonne University. The students used to... I remember several times there were riots. We were doing Harinam, we were caught in the middle of the riots, and they were heavy. The police were using tear gas and beating the students, and the students were fighting back. They'd pick up... In Paris, they had these streets, cobblestone streets. So the students would dig up the cobblestones and throw them at the police, and these were big rocks, and they would smash the windows and hit the police. And we were right in the middle of it. Hare Krishna! So often. So it was always like a run. Paris was like a battle all the time. So when they threw us in the police wagon in Madrid, we thought, well, we're going to go down to the station and they're going to like give us a little chastisement and let us go. But that wasn't the case. You know, this was a dictatorship, and Franco ruled with an iron fist. He was known for his cruelty. And they took our passports, I remember, and they burned them in front of us. They burned our passports, and they threw us in a jail cell, which was meant for four or five people. And, you know, there were other guys in there. There was like 20 people in there or something, and we were all crammed in. And later they moved us to a smaller cell, but it was, you know, the five of us could hardly move in that little cell. And there was a bucket for the toilet, and we got one shower a week. And we would sometimes, you know, what are we going to do here? They said, well, you're never going to get out. You're going to stay here for life. I was thinking, oh, my God. And there were some kind of little mats on the ground. And the girls think that here you get sometimes bit by the punez, by the bed bugs. Oh, you should have seen, you could even see them just seeming on the, you'd lay down, your whole body would be covered by bites. There were rats. I could see rats running across like that. And then we would have kirtan, you know, scrambling, Hare Krishna. And they'd come with scalding hot boiling water, and they'd threaten to throw it on us if we continued kirtan. And eventually they didn't even want us to talk. So we had this, what we called this Manasa program, where everything was done in our minds. And we would sit there and I would whisper, now we're going to have Mongol Arati. It's going to last 20 minutes. So I would mouth the words. And I would play mridanga, a pretend mridanga, and one devotee would play pretend kartals. And the devotees would, they'd dance. And the guards would come by. Because we weren't doing anything, we weren't making any noise, they would just stare like, you're crazy. Completely crazy. So then, and then pray mridanga. And devotees would look up to me and see like what part of the Prema Dwani prayers I was. And then we'd have Tulsi Puja, and we'd all gather around an invisible Tulsi plant. And the boys were so, and they were dancing around the cell like that. The guards were just like, and then I'd give class. And you know, I don't give short classes. So the boys would all sit there very attentively, you know. And I would give, in my mind, I would give a class, you know, of the book. And it was really hard for them to stay awake. And I'd say, stay awake. And then we'd have prasadam, pretend prasadam. One boy, during the class, he'd actually pretend to be cooking. It's the only way we could keep sane, because it was, you know, it was very dimly lit down there. It was dirty. It was wet. It was just the dungeon. And then I remember after 7 days, we got to go take a shower. And then we had to walk naked, so we didn't, you know, try to escape or anything. We were there, and then we took our shower. There's no soap, of course, just some water, drip, some cold water dripping from the something spout. And then after the morning program, we'd go on Sankirtan. And everybody had to close their eyes to pretend they were out on Sankirtan. And then, you know, like for like an hour or two, and then they'd all come back, and we'd report our scores. Big book. Tell stories. Then we'd have lunch, which was a real lunch, just potatoes. They'd throw us potatoes, meat, and something else, so we just eat the potatoes. And this was going on, this went on almost 2 weeks. It was really hard to keep the boys together, but because we had that program. And there was two boys that were on the street who were just dancing along with us when we got arrested. Spanish boys, didn't know anything. Like that boy yesterday who kind of came up with his hat and he wanted to dance with us on Harinam. I asked him to go because we were doing photography. These boys just came. And they were arrested too. And it turned out that one of the boys' fathers was a prominent lawyer, or maybe he was a judge, I can't remember, in Madrid. And somehow he'd found out through the grapevine that his son had been arrested. Because in those days, people were arrested and they just disappeared. They were just taken out in some field and shot or something. It was really bad. So he found out, and he, through the chain of command, he came down. He actually appeared one morning in the cell. And the two boys had actually been put in another cell because the police could see they weren't devotees and they were questionable, or, you know, that they were with us or not. So when the father came, and then the boy said, he asked the father, he helped them also. So a couple of hours later, they took us out, put us in a. It was nighttime actually, like 10 or 11 at night. They put us in a police wagon, and they drove us out in the country. And they let us out, and it was just the stars. Kind of thing. We didn't know which way the city was, and we just started walking. And we walked back in the city, and then we called Paris. And they sent us some money. We took a train right back. Bhagavan said, well, do you want to stay there and try a little? I said, no way. I'm out of here. No, come on, for Lord Chaitanya. I said, I'll do it in France. Spain can wait a little longer. And then then we did some more Sankirtan in France, and then he said to go to Italy. So Italy, we loaded, I remember that we loaded this, we were going to sell incense in Italy and like try to establish a center there. So we packed the whole van with Spiritual Sky incense. It was, you know, just packed full. We were so naive, just kids, you know. We drove to the Italian border, and I remember the customs, he opened up the van, he said, "What is this?" I said, "This is just some incense. We're just going to give it to old ladies and people just for the church, you know." He said, "What?" And so he wasn't. They were going to confiscate it, and I kept preaching to him. And then, of course, we were all in dhotis. So then I just took. I said, "But I'll give you one. I'll give you some." He said, "Yeah." I took the incense. I went, and he had this big blue line because it was, you know, we had all the incense different colors. He had this big blue line across his nose. It smelled really good. I said, "I'll give you 3 packs." He said, "All right." So I gave him 3 packs, and then he let us go. And we didn't speak. I think there were 7 of us on the trip. No one spoke even one word of Italian. That's how it was in those days. We didn't speak one word of Italian. We had all these mimeograph pages, you know, that somebody said was an Italian translation of Ishopanishad. And we drove, I think we went to Milano, and we got out and we had Parinam. But Italy was different. The people were waving, and the kids were coming and dancing with us, and it was so ecstatic. And then somebody would say something to us, and I'd just point to the mimeograph paper. "Read this." Sometimes somebody would speak a little broken. "You have a center here?" "No, it's coming now." And then we'd have Harinam, and then we'd go store to store or on the street, and we'd sell incense. We didn't speak a word of Italian. Just come in and go. I go, make the people smell it, you know, money. And we were in ecstasy. And they bought a lot of it, you know. So then, you know, we found out about mozzarella cheese and different things, you know. And we in those days, we would just camp. We'd find a river and we'd just go, and we had our sleeping bags, you know. It was summer, and we just camp by the river and get up in the morning, have our program, go sell incense and have Harinam. And we didn't establish a center, but we had a really good time. We saw the Colosseum, we went to Rome, you know, with the gladiators, and we walked around. Wow. And we ate lots of olives, and we came back, and Bhagavan said, "So you established a center?" "No, we had a great time." So he was really upset with us, so he sent Dhananjaya.
What about the communists?
Oh, yeah, well, that came a little later. On our second trip down, because Bhagavan sent Dhananjaya down there. He was an English devotee. And he sent him, and he was a good manager. He established the management at the MVT this last, 10, 15 years ago. His wife, Bala Gopal, a famous English devotee. He went down there, and he established a center. So Bhagavan sent us down to help make devotees there. So we went to Torun, I think it was, and we went to the university because we thought that was the best place to preach. But again, Italy was also in the grips of a, you know, the revolutionary spirit amongst the youth in the early 70s, and the seat of the communist revolution amongst the students was at Torun University. So we didn't know that. I didn't know what communism was. It's just this, you know, green behind the ears kid just out there chanting and dancing. So I remember the kirtan party. We went into the university to the main dais where all the kids were having lunch and stuff, and we had this big kirtan. We're dancing and chanting, and you know, some kids came over, but there was this mood, this heavy mood, you know, this looking around, and I could see all these, you know, tough Italian boys, you know, standing by, and they were all talking, you know, and I think, what's going on? So suddenly, one of them came over. It turned out he was a leader. And he said, "I just saved you guys from getting beat up." He said, "They would have just made mincemeat out of you guys." I said, "Why?" He said, "You know." He said, "Well, we're communists here." He said, "But something like he'd been to India or something. And he had a little bit of an appreciation for, you know, India and yoga or something. So he told them to don't beat them up. He said, they would have just finished you guys off. I said, well, thanks. And it was like 40 of these guys, big, you know, tough macho Italian boys, you know, tight t-shirts. They were going to come and beat us up because they were communists. So I said, hey, you know, come along with us. So he came and he visited a few different parts of the city with us. Anyway, to make a long story short, he eventually became a devotee. His name was Gaur Krishna Das, and he was one of the main leaders in the Italian Yatra. He took initiation from Bhagavan. He was always involved in communications and dealing with the press and stuff. He became a famous devotee, but he would often remind me, those communist boys would have beat you guys up really bad. Every time I see him, I say, well, thank you very much. Then we went to Belgium, and we went to Amsterdam. It was so exciting. We were just going to these new places, and we would just go and chant and think we saved the country. And I was always telling my Sankirtan team that, you know, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada told us that if you go to some place for the first time and chant Hare Krishna, Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally accompanies you. So it was always this competition to go somewhere new. In those days, there were plenty of places new, but I always wanted to go to these different countries. So Guru Garanga, one of my godmothers, went to Geneva, and he began a small center there. And he told the French devotees, don't come and collect here because you'll disturb my preaching. This is my territory, and you'll come in and, you know, you may not do things right and we'll get some bad publicity. But I have to tell you now, let it be known that my Sankirtan party used to sneak into Switzerland. I hope Guru Garanga never hears this tape. But we would often go down there because the Swiss franc was double or sometimes triple the value of the French franc. And we had a quota of about $300 a day each as Sankirtan devotees. So 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12. I had to collect about $2,000 a week. And in those days, that was a lot of money and it wasn't easy. It was all from book distribution. So, because the Swiss franc was more valuable, we would go into Switzerland and we would distribute the books there and we'd make our quota in half a week. And the rest of the week, we'd go to the Swiss Alps. We'd go on hikes to the beautiful mountain meadows and swim in the streams and the lakes, you know, and sunbathe. And then come back across the border and we changed the Swiss francs into French francs and send them to Paris. And Bhagavan would say, you're doing great work. You're working hard all week. Oh, yeah, all week. He said, you know, after a while, I'll let you take a break. Oh, okay, that would be nice. Take a break. So you saw, we'd have different parts of France where we would go and do Sankirtan, and I would fight for that region, you know, on the border of Geneva, because other devotees heard about that. So they would do. So it was always a battle. He was always saying, why does everyone want to go down by the Swiss border, he'd say. Oh, it's just good collection. We did that for years. Little naughty. So then, you know the story how Prabhupada would visit us sometimes. Once a year, I think one year he came through twice to France. One time he came to Paris, and the temple room was so crowded. Afterwards, Prabhupada said to Bhagavan, you have to get a bigger center. You should get a farming community. So we said, okay. So then that next afternoon, Prabhupada drove around, well, maybe 300, 400 kilometers south of Paris to look for a chateau, a castle. We didn't have any money. Just enough money to get by, you know. And Prabhupada's thinking, we need a castle. So three or four devotees went with Prabhupada in a deux-chevaux. Deux-chevaux, you know those cars? Deux-chevaux, small little car. Drove with Prabhupada in a deux-chevaux around, you know. They were actually gone for 3 days. Prabhupada was looking for a castle. We didn't have enough money for the petrol. And But next, knowing that, then we did a big marathon for a year and a half, and we were working really hard, mostly inside the metros, selling small books. And Mr. Wagner gave a donation, and eventually we had enough money to make a down payment on a castle that was only 2 hours south of Paris, La Nouvelle Mayapur, it became. Prabhupada was so happy when we got that center. He was actually sick. He was visiting London. He was so sick that they were going to take him back to India. But he was scheduled to come to Paris and then to New Mayapur, but he was so sick he couldn't come. He canceled it. And, you know, we were devastated because we'd worked so long to get that castle because it was Prabhupada's desire. So Bhagavan went over and he told Prabhupada how much all the boys and girls had been preaching, how hard they were working, and explained how we printed, you know, first and second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and we were one of the top yatras, one of the top book distributing yatras in the world in France by that time. We were beating even LA. And so then Bhagavan came in the room and he begged Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "All right, I will come." And Prabhupada's secretary was furious at Bhagavan. So then Bhagavan left the room, and then the secretary said, "How could you do that, Prabhupada? You're so sick." And Prabhupada laughed. He said, "Bhagavan is the supreme controller. He's a good manager." And he came back, and for us it was like ecstasy. And I was in Corsica. Corsica is an island in the Mediterranean Sea. It's part of France. Well, they don't like to think themselves as part of France. They're like always very independent. And there was I don't know if this is still going on. Or they still want independence? They still do. So when I was there, every day bombs would go off in Corsica because the people who wanted a revolution, or they wanted to become independent of France, they were always doing bombings and kidnapping people and stuff. But we thought it was a real exotic place to go, a real adventurous place to go. So we went there. People were warning us about going door to door because it was so dangerous. But we didn't. We just kids. We just had full faith, and we just had a great time there. It was a beautiful island, and you know, after we finished Sankirtan, we'd go down to the beach and swim for 4 or 5 hours. I did our quota, and we'd have Harinams to the city. What's the name of the city? The capital of Corsica. There's two big cities there. I forget. But we, and then one day we discovered there was a yoga center. And in those days, people just didn't practice yoga. It was like something really weird. There was a yoga center. So we went there and we met the person and they asked us to do some yoga programs. "Did you know yoga?" "Oh yes, I am knowing yoga." So I didn't know anything. So then she invited all her friends and we're going to teach yoga. So I said, "Well, actually, we're not. We teach bhakti yoga." And I can remember the look on her face. "You're not going to teach the asanas?" So I started teaching the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare, like that. And I said, "This is the real yoga, and the other yoga is just, Arjuna just rejected that yoga." And I remember the ladies going, "The real yoga is bhakti yoga, yogi nam apisargesha." Anyway, it turned out okay because we had a boy who was a really good cook, and we had a nice feast, and then we had a big kirtan, like our kirtan, jumping and dancing. We took the kirtan out of the street and came back in, and there was this nicely dressed man who had been there and had been listening very attentively and was dancing with us. In the end, he revealed that he was an admiral in the French Navy and he was stationed in Corsica. So most of you know that story, that he became very interested, and then we got news that Prabhupada had come to Paris. So we had to rush back to Paris, take the boat across the Mediterranean, and the drive, it was a 12-hour drive to Paris. And before we left, I told the man, I said, "You know, this is a special opportunity, as a pure devotee of the Lord has come to France, my spiritual master, and why don't you come and meet him?" So he said, "Okay." So he went back, he got leave from the Navy, and he got his wife and two children, and they followed us in a car all the way up to to Paris. And we were a little bit behind in our collection, so when we got there, Bhagavan was upset. So, you know, what you've been doing down there in Corsica? Oh, and then he was upset, so I said, no, I have something to show you. So I had the Admiral outside the office, and I told one of the boys to open the door, and then the Admiral came in his uniform. I looked at Bhagavan and I said, he's an Admiral. He's like, whoa. So they sat down and they talked. Bhagavan was a good preacher. So the man was even more impressed. So then Prabhupada was upstairs, so then Bhagavan said, I'll take you to meet our guru. So in those days, to go into Prabhupada's room was like, it's impossible for the general devotee. So I was right behind the Admiral, like this far behind, walking. And the guard at Prabhupada's door tried to stop me. I said, I'm with the Admiral. I got in. So I kind of sat to the side, but Prabhupada spoke to him for about 45 minutes. And he was really a nice guy. He was like, with Prabhupada, he treated Prabhupada like his senior. He was sitting very, he'd say, yes, sir, you know, like this. And then Prabhupada, the darshan was over, and Prabhupada asked him, or he asked Prabhupada, what they were speaking about the Gita. So he said, I don't have much time to read, but if I can read something, what should I read? And Prabhupada gave him a Gita with his own hand. Said, you read the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And if you just stick to that 9th chapter, you'll know everything about our philosophy. That stuck in my mind. And that Admiral took that book, and he was very grateful. And he left, actually, I think 2 days later, he stayed for the class the next morning. And then I think he actually got to meet Prabhupada again one more time, but I wasn't there. Then the next morning he left with his family. They drove back. Years later, I was doing book distribution in Paris, again in Dodi. You know, I was a grihastha, so I had my white cloth, and I made sure it was nicely washed and ironed every day. And I always got the garland of Radharani from Radha Parasishwara, and I would wear this beautiful garland, and I had a mirrored book bag. I had incense sticking out and Bhagavad Gita's, and I'd shave my head every day in big tilak like that, and go down into the offices in Paris and walk in, bonjour. That was all I knew. Bonjour. Bonjour. I'd walk around and put that incense into their nose. You know, sell some incense. And if they give, you know, if they give more than the incense, eventually I could show a book and then get a small donation. That's how I did the books. So I was doing, there was a military parade down near the Champs-Élysées. The Arc de Triomphe. So, you know, they cordoned the whole area off, and then it's important, you know, they were marching like that, and then there was this big group of, you know, military people, Air Force, Navy, and Army, and they were all meeting, and then it was all this cordoned off, and I looked, and I was trying to get in there, but, you know, the police wouldn't let me in, they were chasing me away, and I hadn't done hardly any books, and I was thinking, I'm wasting my time at this military parade, I'll go back to La Pigalle or someplace. And then I saw the Admiral. I saw he was a tall man. And he looked older, but I noticed him, and I was like this, you know, and the policeman, get away, boy, get away from the, you know, hey, Admiral, Admiral. Somehow I made enough noise, and he saw me. So, I tried to get under the ropes, and they pushed me away again. So then he came. And I remember all the other military people looking like, where's he going to talk to that crazy guy with a bald head? And he came over, and then they let me under the ropes because, you know, he was coming. And 20 meters in, I met him. He was like so, you know, appreciative. He said, you're here. I said, yeah, I'm distributing Bhagavad Gita. Remember Bhagavad Gita? He said, yeah, I know Bhagavad Gita. He said, I follow your spiritual masters. Every day since I met you, I have read the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I follow this your spiritual. He said he was the most amazing personality, the most special person I ever met in my life. And by that time, Prabhupada had departed. He said, where is he now? And I said, well, Admiral, he's left this world. He passed away. I remember his cheeks flushed. And he became emotional. He said, No. I said, yeah, he left. No, such a great soul has left. He was doing so much for France. I said, yeah, and he got all emotional. He was a military man. He controlled his emotions. And he said, okay, thank you. And then he walked away. Every day he was following Prabhupada's instructions. Oh, how much benefit. Just this morning as I was thinking about this class, I was wondering where he is. He was older, much older, so maybe he's a devotee somewhere now. So then the next year we were on traveling Sankirtan again. We were in, what is the name of that town? It starts with a P. South of Paris, a big town. Huh? Not maybe it was Perpignan. It was Perpignan. And I had four, there was me and four, and three other devotees, and we were doing Sankirtan, book distribution. And we met some interested people, so we decided we would do a program. We rented a little place, and then we met the editor of the biggest newspaper in the town. And he said, yeah, I'll help you, boys. I'll help you. He said, I have a contact. You can get a bigger hall. It fits something like 600 or 700 people. He said, I'll get that to you for free, and you can hold your program there. And I went, whoa. Like, we would hold programs to get 10 people. But he was so enthusiastic. So I said, okay. And he said, I'll advertise the program in my newspaper. So every day there were these beautiful ads, you know. Hare Krishna Festival. And there were four of us. We didn't even think twice about it. We're gonna anyone who comes, we're gonna make them into pure devotees. So, you know, we printed this little black and white, with his help, we printed this little black and white invitations, you know, Hare Krishna Festival, vegetarian food, lecture on Bhagavad Gita, theater, like that. There's four of us. So we were out in the streets, and we got so much into it. We were just distributing thousands of them, you know. And the day came, and we went to the hall for the first time. We didn't have our Dominique to go set it all up. And we walked inside. It was this beautiful auditorium with a beautiful stage and lighting and seats going up like that, you know. It's the day of the program. I said to the boys, so what are we going to do, actually? Really? What's our program going to be? We sat down. Okay. Well, Indra, you can lead the kirtan. You can sing Jai Radha Madhava with the cart, with the mridanga. Okay. And then you can give a lecture. Then we'll do Boatman and the Scholar. Then we'll distribute prasadam. Yeah, well, that's a really great program. We were so excited. We got on the stage and we started. It was like 2 in the afternoon. The program was at 6. And we started practicing Boatman and the Scholar. So I was the boatman, because the boatman doesn't have to speak just a little bit, right? And the other three were the scholar and his two friends. Right? So they wrote my lines out. Je suis un boatman. Ici, c'est la rivière. Asseyez-vous. Which means sit down. I had my paper. So we ran back into the city and we got some powdered sugar and some powdered milk and some butter. And we made, you know, we really insisted, wow, there's going to be like 100 people are going to come. So we made like 100 Simply Wonderfuls. And then I was sitting on the stage practicing my mridanga. You know, I had my shoes on, everything. We just sat on stage. And there's this big stage and there's four of us. Jaya Radha Madhava. We're really good if we had a microphone, don't you think? So, like, one of the boys went and somehow contacted the guy in charge of the hall. He agreed to give us a microphone. So we had a microphone there. I thought, well, I have to speak, and maybe I should have one for the translator. So the guy was real uptight. All right. We had two microphones. So I just waited. We were sitting on the stage, and 450 people showed up. Nice people. We were just sitting on the stage. We didn't even go to the door to greet them. We were just sitting on the stage watching them as they came, and they were sitting in the audience looking at us. Hare Krishna Festival. Nobody knew what Hare Krishna was, but they're staring. So we just kind of, you know. We didn't have the intelligence to like wait behind the curtain and come out. And I, you know, we'd done Sankirtan all day. But, you know, we weren't like, my dhoti was wrinkled, and I used to wear boots in those days. I had these, you know, big boots that went like that, because that's just, I don't know why, but I had these big, like, my boots on are showing here, my big boots. I had a sweater on. It was, I'm looking at the watch, you know. Okay, should we start now? Yeah, there's 450 people. Program was supposed to start at 6:30, and like, you know, at 7, I think, I guess we should start now. People are like getting restless, you know. Jayarat Hamad Hava Kunjabi Hari. I told the boys, look really happy, smile. So, yeah, there was me, there was Prakasatma, and there was Rasada. Rasada was the boy who was, what did I call him? Pigpen. Pigpen was there, and he wasn't out of his delusion yet. So he was kind of, I don't know what we looked like, you know, four of us. And then, we left our books in the van. So I realized I didn't have a Bhagavad Gita, so then I think I'd memorized the verse the last few days, so I just spoke that verse and gave the translation. And Prakasatma was a really good translator. He's only 17, but he spoke good English. So I gave a class about Krishna consciousness. And then we had the play. So I took off my sweater and I took off my shirt. I was the boatman, so I was just bare-chested in my dhoti, and I put my dhoti up like I thought, you know, like kind of, like off to the side, whatever. And then we said, well, this play is called The Boatman and the Scholar. Came out, and then I spoke with my little paper. Asseyez-vous. S'il-vous play. Anyway, we got a little applause afterwards. And then, and then we had a kirtan, stand-up kirtan. We stood up, and we did the Swami stuff like that. And then I said, open the van and bring some of the books. So one boy ran out, he bought the books, and I piled them in front of the stage there. I said, so now you're going. So thank you for coming to our festival, our Hare Krishna festival. And then I said, please take some books on the way out. And in the end, people applauded. We got 450 people to applaud. As simple as it was, I guess I just appreciated our good intentions, or maybe there was something in the philosophy we were just trying, but the people applauded and they walked out and said, oh, thank you very much. And we sold, you know, a good amount of books as people went away. So that was Krishna consciousness and the pioneer, a little bit different than our carnival spirituel. Anyway, after that program, the next day, we learned that Prabhupada was coming to Geneva. So we just packed our van, and we just drove to Switzerland. Halfway across France, just drove to Switzerland. And we got there just in time. I think Prabhupada was arriving at 12. We arrived at 10 in the morning at the temple, and there was nobody there. And one devotee, like, getting things ready. Everyone's at the airport. Prabhupada's coming to the airport. So we jumped in our van. We drove to the airport. And what you're going to see is that moment. We arrived there. And I grabbed the drum and we went into the reception hall. We could see Prabhupada's plane arriving. And then Gugaranga and Bhagavan and somebody else went out to receive Prabhupada. You could go out on the tamarack and they received Prabhupada. And the television crew was there. So we're leading, I don't know if I'm leading kirtan there, probably we're leading kirtan there. And then the next scene is Prabhupada coming through, walking through the airport, so we're jumping around, Hare Krishna. And then he gets in the limousine, then he goes, and the rest you'll see, there was initiation. And during that visit, during that visit, Guru Granth said, "They have really good Swiss chocolate here. We should give Prabhupada some Swiss chocolate." I said, "Okay." In those days, we didn't know if it was wrong or right, or if there was any debate about it. So he sent me to the store, and I said, "I'm looking at all this, because in Switzerland they have all kinds of chocolate, you know, different types." So I'm thinking, what kind should I get, Prabhupada? There was white chocolate, there was dark chocolate, there was brown chocolate. So I bought the dark chocolate, which is bitter, as you know. And I bought the brown chocolate, which is more sweet. So then, this was after the initiation, I came to Prabhupada's room. Guru Granth said, "Srila Prabhupada, the Swiss are famous for their chocolate." So, and Indrajumna Das has some chocolate for you. He went to the store to buy some chocolate. Oh. So I remember tearing open, I think, which one should I give Prabhupada first? I'll give him the dark chocolate first. So I opened it and I gave it to Prabhupada and went, Then I said, I could see he didn't like it so much, so then I opened the brown. I said, "Try this one, Prabhupada." So he ate it and said, "Oh, that is very nice." So then I gave him one more piece and he ate it. So I don't know if they still have that on the GBC law books. You're not supposed to say chocolate. As far as I'm concerned, I shared some chocolate with my guru. So that, I considered, you know, that Prabhupada had taken, so that was Maha Chocolate Bar. I really enjoyed that bar. That night. It was really good. I'll probably get in trouble for this one. Anyway. And we were going to install deities. So that was going to be the next day, I think. So Gungaranga and I, they were beautiful neemwood deities from India, Gornitai. So Prabhupada had been lecturing about how Krishna owns everything and devotees should use everything in Krishna's service. So Guru Granth said, "So that means that Gornitai, they own this city of Geneva, isn't it, Indrajumna?" I said, "Yeah, this is their city." He said, "Well, they're newly arrived here. We should take them on a tour of the city." I said, "Yeah, okay." They were big deity like this. We took them off the altar. And we put them in the back seat of our car. And Guru Gauranga was driving, and I was in the passenger seat, and Nityananda was behind me, and Gauranga was behind him. And I said, "Sirs, we're going on a tour of your town." And when we drove into the city, and I had, you know, this little description of everything in Geneva, so we'd stop, and I'd say, "Lord Chaitanya, this is your bell tower." It was established in, you probably know, but it was established in 1776, and it was, you know, attacked by the this and that. And then we drive on, I'd say, "Lord Nityananda, this is your town hall. This is where all the business goes on, and we're hoping to get permission to open a bigger temple, if you could just give us a little help, you know." We were talking to the deities like that. And we spent 2 hours driving around. We took them to the Geneva Lake. It's a very beautiful lake. And then we took them out of the car and we were holding them because the grass was wet. And I was saying, "Lord Chaitanya, this is your lake, isn't it? Look at your swans." Years later, Guga and I used to just laugh and laugh about that. But I was phoning the deities and I put them back and I'd say, "Are you comfortable?" I guess when you're right, very, very advanced, that's what it will actually be like. You know, you'll talk to God directly. We were just kids. And we took them back and then we brought them out, put them back on the altar and paid our obeisances. And we hope you like your city. Yeah, so it's getting a little late. This is about about an 8-minute video. Srila Prabhupada in Geneva, 1974. Key. Yeah.